For the first, I don't know why. Okay.
All right. Well, welcome back to Rhetoric Warriors, brought to you, of course, by Political Persuasion Training for America. That's my new way of organizing this podcast. It is June 28th, 2024, post Armageddon. We will talk today about the debate, the first debate that happened last night between Joe Biden, Tired Joe, and Donald Trump, Lion Donald, Lion Don. Very, interesting reverberations going around the world today about that debate. I'm here with, as always, my ex-dissertation professor, director, emeritus from South Florida, Dr. Dave Payne. And we texted back and forth about this a little bit last night, just, you know, in the immediate aftermath of, as the aftershocks continue to hit. So, you tell me, like, how come the first response isn't always, hey, let's go ask what the rhetoricians, ask the rhetoricians what they think?
That's a good question. I mean, I often have thought our, you know, our political commentators are the street rhetoricians, basically. I think the academic has been subsumed, which I guess is good.
Well, it's at least been nibbled at.
It's out there.
They at least have little guppy versions of rhetoricians out there.
Sure, and of course, you know, and historians. I mean, you know, rhetoric has always lived with journalism and history, and so. For instance, Heather Cox Richardson this morning, I think, had the best rhetorical analysis I've read so far.
Yeah, she had a nice one. But why isn't rhetoric the first, the de facto? We're the mothership.
I think it's just their jobs, and, you know, they're protecting them, and maybe we ought to be better able to account for that, because I think the what we've often thought of the mixed martial arts, or the all-star wrestling component. I mean, I've thought about this quite a lot this morning, of what didn't happen. What really, you know, was the disappointment here? And I think the politicos, and I would include myself, the people who've been paying attention, monitoring, who are actively daily involved in this struggle for truth and wanting the truth narrative to emerge, we were seeking a champion here. We, you know, and so when Trump is doing what he did, we can go on and characterize,
which
as
is,
I thought, Heather Cox Richardson,
like complete lies. I didn't count a single thing that he said was true.
I can't
not
even
a
think
single
of,
thing.
Yeah, not a single sentence was actually true. I think one commentator this morning said counted 35. Serialized, which probably doesn't even begin to cover it.
Yeah,
if we hadn't all turned away in horror and disgust, averting our eyes, the fact checking of CNN right afterward that they played this morning, I didn't watch it last night because we were all just kind of reeling. It was really quite you know, effective, like 3.5 minutes solid of this, you know. So and I think it would have been a better strategy. We're digressing, kind of like both of them, but it would have been
but
a better
true.
strategy had Biden been told, don't go there, just say at the outset, look, if I try to counter every one of these lies, we will get nothing else done. This is a ball of lies. And he didn't say that. He just didn't say it, you know, go on to say what we needed him to say.
Well, just for context, let me. I don't know how much you've watched today. Did you just watch his Raleigh, North Carolina rally?
I caught clips of him being the way they wanted him to be.
Him being the champion.
Do we really want him to be that way? I'm not sure.
But him being the champion that you're talking about, calling Trump out very clearly, very forcefully, making a clear distinction between truth and falsity, you know, and starting with that, like launching into that, never getting off that kind of bifurcation.
Sure, but he was just being the different. I mean, he did last night say this is all lies. He did say, he did try to counter. He did answer. He didn't stay focused as well as one might like on the big lies. I think that's part of the effectiveness of Trump's strategy of you know, the maelstrom, or what Richardson called the Gish Gallop or whatever.
Yeah,
In classic debate,
I've never heard that term. I
collegiate
like.
debate, that's the spread, right? Motor mouth. You just throw out as many things, regardless of how important they are, as possible, and the other side has to answer all of them. And the inexperienced person will try to do that rather than sift through, find the big points, and get their own case out. So, you know, this is not unheard of. And whether or not he was coached to deal with that, he should have been. And whether he just didn't execute, which also happens, quite frankly, with 18-year-old debaters frequently because of the pressure of the situation. But back
well,
to
and
the,
think of it this way, too. I mean, he's such a traditional politician. He even said it this morning, it's tough to debate with a liar. He wasn't
right.
prepared for that kind of, you know, rhetoric coming at him, like she said in the article, that maelstrom, that just, you know, torrent, unending torrent of super lies.
But why not?
How to answer it.
What else does Trump have?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I mean, did they really think that he was just going to, with his prep, just meander about sharks and batteries? That's what they hoped for.
Right.
And as the evening wore on, you know, another 30 minutes he might have gotten there, because he became more outrageous as he was more emboldened by his package of lies. They got more and more ridiculous and obvious toward the end. But by that time, Biden was really, you know, off center, I guess. But my point is that this is all a construction, this idea that we need a knockout punch, or and I think that's kind of the, gee, there's the Joe Biden we really need to show he's got the fight left in him. And we do need that for debate. We do need that for TV. Do we really need that for a president? And I
well,
think
are you talking about the communication work of the president? Like, my thing last night is like, is this a communication contest or is this a presidential contest?
Right.
Like, who can actually be a president?
Commentators making that distinction that Biden's proved he can be president and make decisions. He simply lost in his ability to campaign. And I think what Democrats are wringing their hands and freaking out about today is, does this mean he can't win the election? And that is also the construction of the campaign, right? What does it take to win the election? And I think you have to parse that out. You know, I'm not going to pretend I really have the answer, because I've heard both sides pretty eloquently you know, defended today that, oh, we can get over this, and oh, no, we can't. I'm professionally fence sitting on that question at the moment.
Well, it's 4 months out. I mean, it's one debate. It's 4 months out. If Trump has proved anything to everybody, it's that you can wash pretty much everything away.
Right. But, you know, when the other examples of somebody losing a debate, with the possible exception of Reagan in his first debate, where he did seem to be quite befuddled and old by those standards at the time. You know, you come back from a bad debate, but you don't come back from, and this is really what it boils down to. The sin that Biden committed was being old. And the framework for, you know, when you say, can you do the job? This is the question that he needed to answer. And I think we're asking, which job is that? The lapses of memory were not that huge. But they were exploded in the context of the moment and disabling.
Well, let's talk about this, because to me, framing this with traditional sort of political talk and traditionally what debates mean and traditionally how we use those things going forward kind of misses the point of Trump himself, which is to reset the chessboard, or checkerboard or multi, you know, game board of politics, which is, I'm going to sit here and slander you 4 feet away. I'm going to lie about everything at high volume. And can you parse your way through that? And that's not really, like, I would have reframed this all. You saw some of this in the debates or the multi-log today as everything exploded. There were a few people that popped up and was like, yeah, great. Biden's old. He had a bad debate. Now let's talk about Trump and this massive fictional anti-reality that he just put out in front of everybody that has become so normalized that it doesn't even seem that weird. You know, and that's the game we're playing. Like, how do you go back to Trump and say, okay, yeah, Biden old, he'll come back, but let's get back to Trump and, focus on that, because that's what seems like the Democrats aren't doing today.
Not very well. That's right. Why isn't anybody saying, wow, that was an incredible giant tinfoil ball of mythic confabulated falsehoods that, and I don't think Trump has the creative abilities to put that together. I think he reflects, what's been going on in that conversation, that dark web kind of
sure.
conversation. And they have blamed, made Biden this evil figure in the midst of all of this. So it was an easy, translation.
Yeah, Trump just did
because he will listen to that because it aggrandizes him. I mean, that's
well, Trump did his stump speeches. It was just the greatest hits of his stump speaking. And that's why he was so forceful. That's why he seemed so prepared. He just got up there and did his stump speeches.
Okay.
And so like all the greatest
hits. Which was what Biden really did need to do.
Yeah, that's exactly what Biden did. That's what he did the last time he debated.
Right.
Like, he just kept ignoring Trump and just stayed on point, said forceful things about what democracy is, that traditional political talk, which he's really good at,
Right.
But like you said, he started trying to answer that bizarro world coming at
and
him.
Even getting it, the nadir of the whole thing was getting into the tit for tat about my golf score and my golf swing. That would
yeah.
have been so easy to just, laugh away. I mean, it would have been nice to have a witty comeback, but just to laugh that one off, or to reduce it to the one line of, well, I'm playing golf with you, but only if you carry your own bag, and leave it at that. the baby was drowning in the bathwater at that point.
Yeah, it was dialogue.
But here's the deal: the difference in audiences between the people who are making talk about it, including you and me, that are embedded in this stuff. And I want to try to listen to this from the perspective of people who are not immersed. And what did they hear? They do hear equally both sides. And I think both sides are unacceptable to the majority of the people that we really did want to reach. In other words, nobody in Trump camp is talking about replacing him today as a result of him vomiting up this hairball of lies. They don't care. They know that's what's going on. They know that's what's always been going on, and nobody's defecting here. They're kind of going, oh, well, he showed Biden. And they think there is some kind of literary truth in the midst of this, some poetic truth perhaps, that the Dems really are the bad guys. And any flack sent up to bring them down would be okay. So that's that side. Those people aren't gonna, there's nothing Biden could have said.
Right.
That would change those people anyway. And the people on the other side going, oh, gee, we cannot possibly vote for Trump no matter what. There's gotta be an alternative. And we were, those people were disappointed because they were hoping, that they would be vindicated here and put at ease. And they weren't. So what are most people who are not immersed in the tit for tat of all of this flack, for better want of a better word, I think they just also were not they were not helped. They were not drawn in. I don't think it's probably going to change a great deal, except Biden's going into this, if the polls are correct, slightly behind, and more young people, people who are not engaged in the politics of it, are not going to be drawn into a confident place.
Well, here's one of the things that I think is kind of interesting and hopeful about Biden. Biden's really good at rebounding from, hard jabs to the face. Like, he did it all the way through, like during the Democratic process, getting the Democratic nomination the first time, like when Kamala Harris came after him for supporting a racist busing, initiative. And he took it, and he, like they said then, hey, he's a grandpa and on stage with all these people.
They were counting him out before the South Carolina primary last time. So, that narrative has emerged pretty strongly today that Biden's a fighter and he fights his way back, and he's lost more presidential elections than anybody. Finally made it when he found an opponent as unworthy as Trump. And there's something to that, right? So that's one narrative emerging. The other narrative that's emerging is, okay, you know, it's really not, you know, we've been seeking this vicarious hero. They're not using that language, I am, but that it's time. So I think it was Newsom, the first to voice it last night, but I've heard it echoed throughout today, of quit worrying and start working, right?
Yeah.
We need to quit, you know, bedwetting over this thing and get out there. All of us, you know, it's our work to get done. So I'm hearing that echoed a lot as kind of the talking point to take away of, wow, everybody's got to come forward now and not and win the election.
Well,
not
and that may be an interesting variation, right, on the hero. Like the horde itself becomes the hero, because this hero, this king, is too aged to really, you know, walk up there and be virile enough to lead us.
Well, and in a way, that is the shadow of the MAGA thing. I mean, I think most of those people, the politicos anyway, know that Trump is a completely defective unit and that this is all garbage. But it carries the weight of keeping the horde, you know, animated, and in the fight, in the drama, in the all-star wrestling arena here, craving the next chair to be thrown. I think that's right, that's what we're failing to do, and Democrats don't want to do that. Okay, but they're saying we have to sort of also, you know, and I do believe that from the very beginning, Trump has just been a tool of those people. I mean, if you read Bob Woodward's first book on Trump, Fear, right, he talks about when Steve Bannon and his friend go to see Trump and say, yeah, this is the guy that can do it for us, right? I say that with not to Steve Bannon goes to jail, right?
Right. Well, and I think it's, you know, I've always said, having worked in Hollywood for such a large swath of my life and entertainment, that when I see Trump, it's somebody who will stay on script, who can follow the script, who does not add creativity to the script. When he does, he gets into these weird shark versus battery things, so he doesn't wander over there that often. And his superpower is he's been trained for 40 years as an actor, you know, and a public, as a promoter and as a reality show guy. And if you give him the script, he's not going to change it. He's not going to elevate the language. He's not going to add in, you know, he's not going to miss points. He can stay on script. And he said it, and last night, forcefully, you know, and within, you know, 4 feet of an old guy. So you get this sense, like you said, this kind of vicarious sense of a, you know, a faux hero, like he's playing the role, even though the things that he's saying are total garbage. Like, one of the things I wish, and Newsom, you can just see it, right? Newsom is like the young version of what needed to be on stage to eviscerate Trump.
Right.
Like, there's so many lines, so many ways to go into Trump's rhetoric because it's so weak. But even him, like, talking about deporting people, you know, I'm going to deport 18 million people. Like, well, you know, the Nazis started with deporting the Jews. You know, they only decided to kill them because other countries wouldn't take them, and it was too pricey to get rid of them out of Germany.
He even talked about camps at some point. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and putting them in camps and all these, you know, sort of Nazi-light, Nazi-leaning kind of rhetorics that are just sitting there for, you know, just right targets for somebody to go after. And I just don't think that's Biden's, you know, that's not his era. That's not what they did.
Sure. And Biden needed to have a more coherent pill about immigration without going into, you know, that steps outside of that entire. I mean, Trump, you know, turned everything to immigration, every topic,
every
question
time, every
almost.
Time.
And that by itself, right, is not only censorable, but, you know, attackable. I mean, if we simply step out of that fray and sort of say, listen, do you really think all of America's problems are because, you know, present a few facts about what immigration was during the Trump presidency, and you know, repeat the current talking point, which is we had a plan to go, and that was all in there. That was all in there. But Trump was now echoing the meandering lit ball style of Trump rather than, you know, lining up his own ducks the way he needed to. But yeah, and then keep going, I guess.
It's just sitting there, so hecklable. Hecklable.
But you're right, and that comment is also been made that Trump knew how to look at the camera. A big part of the painfulness of watching was watching the way Joe was not
I don't know what
aware of the
that.
Way he was looking on camera.
Yeah,
and he lost composure, and you know, and I suppose maybe that's a function of aging, that you know, just that kind of control.
I think not having the audience there actually played against Biden, but he feeds off, you watched it this morning at the rallies, like he feeds off the audience really well.
Sure.
And I think all that stuff, like he ended up being in a vacuum with this lunatic, you know,
and having appeared on camera before, that really is important. I mean, it is very difficult to look at the camera without any audience and naturalize your community.
Well, and Trump, again, as a trained actor, knows how to fill a room with his voice. Whether somebody's there or not, he barely pays attention to humanity anyway. You know, right. Well, Biden tries to feed off, you know, people for real and make real connections.
Sure. Well, and I think, you know, the insanity itself is energizing. I think there is something about the psychotic rant that, you know, these things fit together in some sort of strange ecology. If you listen to the way psychotics talk, these things all do have some sort of you know, and it all circulates around certain sorts of key symbols, of which Biden / Brandon, he even called him that at one point, is one, right? But anyway, immigration.
So. Yeah, if you're running a dystopian fiction rhetoric, you know, you can put any character in there you want. You can put any, you can put anything in there. There's no bounds to drawing it back to some type of actual fact. Like you tell me there are 18 million illegal immigrants right now in this country, you know, who are raping and killing every day, because that's the narrative that he threw out, you know? And it's like, that's as dystopian as it gets. I think I've seen that movie. You know?
But just because Trump did that performance, and what we began by saying is, why is anybody paying attention to that performance, right? And all of its absurdity, and why isn't that a case for saying Trump should step down from the ticket, right? Do we really need insanity, obsessed insanity, focused on, you know, scapegoating minorities as our future progress? I mean, that's a much more legitimate question than do we need an old man that has great advisors?
That's a good distinction. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what, you know, we walked in. That's the problem. That's the failure of the debate, is we walked in with a choice between old and crazy. And we still have that choice, I think. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't think anything about, just because Trump successfully performed that, necessarily will draw more people into it. It will embolden the people who are already there, but who on their side were, you know, were cheering for the Demonator to whack the Biden. That's just, and the media continues to feed that kind of dramatism, right?
Well, and if you think of the dramatism of what we expected from Biden, to be able to step up in the white armor, slay the crazy Black Knight, you know, in the black armor, with verbal wizardry, and knock him down and show everybody's crazy, and you see that again and again, it's still going to play out. I mean, we're still looking for that, like his whole resurrection narrative today of, we'll look at him today. I mean, the guy got up this morning, had a cup of coffee and got over his cold and went out and just crushed, you know, in that talk. And if they can, you know, maybe blow that balloon back up of the white knight, then I think that's why I said, like, even last night, I think the last thing I texted you was, this too shall pass, because there was a note today on somebody's Twitter feed about, hey, you know, quit playing day trader in politics because that's not this. You know, there's so much that's going to happen between now and 4 months from now, or even now in the convention, that this is going to go into the wash like everything else. And it may have some primacy. It's vivid. That was a vivid failure because it was so visual.
Well, like I said, we were looking for the comfort of having that been put to rest and for Biden to, follow his trend line into a more positive, and we won't know for a week whether the polls will reflect that or not, or whether they'll reflect anything. That just didn't happen as a result of this debate. So yeah, disappointment is a good word for it. But once again, I don't know that more Trump voters were created as a result of this.
Right. Well, and then the question is like, were Biden voters lost because of this?
Yeah, I mean, some people who might have been energized to vote that otherwise would not, quite possibly.
The
So.
psychology splinters so fast, though, right? It is like this sense of, oh, I was kind of on cruise control because I thought Biden had it, you know. Versus now, oh my God, which is what
Well, and
you're
I think
talking about. That
that's the wisdom of the surrogate. I mean, within 12 hours, I saw, right, the governor of Massachusetts or Michigan, and Gavin Newsom, Kamala Harris, with all kinds of, oh, we should really be paying more attention to her. She really did a good job of getting at you. Each of them went out and took a turn slapping Trump around the way that we wanted Biden to do. And then this morning, Josh Shapiro appears. Once again, all of the people that when you ask who would replace him, these are the candidates. They all immediately go on media, and once again, the message is no, I'm not thinking about replacing him or running. We got Joe's back, and right. So we need to get working. So the surrogate crowd, and especially that pathetic gaggle of wannabe vice presidents that are
It's
waiting
so
for
crazy.
crumbs, waiting for dog biscuits.
It is such
That
a.
can't play that well. That cannot play that well.
I don't know, man. Like, whatever the criteria people are using for interpreting those guys just doesn't seem like a real world, you know, criteria. I don't know what they're looking for, but so talk about this from like, again, a mythic or even a historical, like if we pull back and we play rhetoric on it. You know, from a mythic narrative standpoint, the dying king, right? This is the Lear. This is the, you know, the
Yeah,
dying
right. Yeah.
aged king who can no longer hold the realm together.
That's a nice creative move. But we still want him there. The young people are going to go out and fight the war. Yeah. So you don't just bury him. He's still the king, damn it.
Right.
So,
Well, even Hamlet, like
and
it's
he's full of
still.
wisdom and he says wise things. And maybe that's what Joe should have done rather than try to debate factoids. Was come armed with some sort of elevated platitudes about,
Yeah. That's what I would have,
And
you know,
I
like.
do think that that is the script that either they wrote and he didn't perform, which is about the future, right? Listen to this dystopian world. Is that really the world that you're living in? Is that really, the slice of this pie you really want? What is the vision at the core here? And I think, to draw in minorities and young people and unlikely voters or people who are marginally unlikely to vote, that kind of rhetoric probably, draw them in because that is about them. And yeah.
Yeah, and I've seen it with, like you said, the surrogate crowd. You know, Josh Shapiro flamed up, you know, last week by saying, you know, all I see when I see Trump is some guy shit talking America. You know, I'm
Right.
tired of it. I'm tired of this
Exactly.
guy doing this.
Exactly.
You know.
That was a good summary of Trump. I forget who did it this morning. Of here's exactly what he said. And America's a shithole and blah 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 blah. There's no way this guy is getting elected. Oh, were it true. But one would like to think that gee, is that really the so somehow or another he's got to be made to own that.
Right, you guys sticking with that for sure.
And I think that is the main strategy here. I think the you know the mantra about democracy and all of that's true. All that's true, but I think they've got to reanimate the progressive vision here, in a tame, middle of the road kind of way. Is that we're going to march forward, and I think people do want to hear that.
Well, I
we
think
really
they get
are
lost.
living in a multicultural society, and this really is a lot of what this is about.
Yeah, well, you can. So you're gonna deport the illegal immigrants. Who's next? Like you tell me, because apparently, there's a whole crowd of people that don't fit within your vision, your story of America. What's to make us think you're going to stop with the illegal immigrants? All these things again that I just wonder why. Again, I think because Biden gets so locked into being traditional politician of policy, 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 facts, 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 as opposed to story, story, story. It's like,
and
let me tell you the story.
That's an extension of his job as president, to be able to discuss what we're doing. We're finding solutions to these problems. But once again, on the debate stage, that was just simply an incredible laundry list where there was no hierarchy there. And somebody made the observation that in a 90-minute debate, you didn't even hear the word infrastructure one time.
Yeah.
Yet we heard about, and I've got $8,000 over here for, right? I mean, and those are all important things to do as president, as an administrator, and having been an administrator, you're marshaling a billion details and they're all important, which is nothing that Trump ever did. Had any awareness of, and he never did anything
right.
Policy-wise. He passed Paul Ryan's tax cut, which was the deal that they cut to give him Republican support. He didn't even engineer or really provide any support for that. And that was the only thing that got done other than, 6 miles of wall, I guess, in the entire 4 years.
What other stories come to mind that would frame this of, like even modern film or things of the aging king that is still a good person and has all these forces, that he's got to rise up one more time. It's before it was like, Hal into the breach once more, the young king coming to fruition in war. But this is like the old king trying to hold on for one last battle. Do we have that story in America strongly? Where would it be?
I'm thinking Game of Thrones. That's an unfortunate thought. I think we need more mythic fodder than this. I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure we need some student of Joseph Campbell to.
Well, we just don't have a lot of stories of old people with power who are powerful.
Period.
They're almost always in the way. They're almost always, the semi-villain because of their incompetence, in choosing the wrong people.
Well, maybe it's more as important as it is to have a good grandfatherly role of the aging king. We need a villain, a court villain that is pretty slimy and lies and manipulates and will do anything to get into the coffers of the kingdom or something.
Right. Well, this is the Lion King,
let's
right?
Write the story. I don't care if it has any mythic predecessor.
Well, this is the Lion King, right? So, but you had the young virile king and his child the slimy Trump lion, killed him, and then it had to come back around where the young king came back to take over. I'm just still trying to think of, maybe we do need.
Well, I think
maybe
if he just started calling Trump Scar, we could
something, right? Like
and,
something
at least at least, at least it's in the culture. At least it's in the culture these days, right? Or to have everybody whisper in hushed tones, Mufasa.
You get those, you remember Atlantic City with Burt Lancaster?
No.
So in that movie, he was an old guy. He had always been kind of a low level. Non-gangster, and he found like a big pile of cocaine and used it to get some money and to get some clothes on again and seduced the young Susan Sarandon into thinking he had a lot of money. He was just kind of a, old guy looking for love to give away some money. And then, eventually he was selling all the coke off to young gangsters. And then eventually they figured out it wasn't his coat. And so it all fell down around him. But it's always that kind of story of the old person trying to do too much, trying, you know, and failing because they are too old.
Yeah, well, you know, let's try the Knights of the Round Table. That so what occurred to me, you're talking is we have the aged king. What we need are the young knights, and that's
which is the surrogates.
That's why we need the surrogates, the Gavin Newsom to step up and out, and Shapiro to step up and out, and even Kamala Harris to, you know, they need to be engaging in the battle, and people are going to feel good that. You know, and I have felt that way all along, that we sort of knew this day was coming and we all played in the streets and didn't think about it. Because, you know, well, personally, I have no control over what the Democratic Party does. They never call. They never call the rhetorician. But they needed to be cultivating somebody. They tried to cultivate, I think. Well, I don't know. I've heard it said that, you know, they kind of kept Kamala Harris in the background because she would, you know, overshine Biden. I don't know that that's the case, but somehow they didn't sell her very well. And the kinds of things that she was given prior to sort of the abortion assignment really went nowhere. But they needed
they
to be
sent
cultivating
her to the border. They sent her into the heart of darkness.
Right. The one insolvable problem.
The GOP's biggest play is the border, right up there with Hunter Biden.
Right.
You know.
And that's right. You've got the foul Hunter Biden story, which, you know, in the great tit for tat of the debate of you're a convicted felon. Well, your son's a convicted felon. But, you know, and once again, it'd be nice if Joe had the deftness to sort of say, you know, my son's not running for president, and thank you. But it does show that I'm not in charge of the special prosecutor.
Yeah, the last time in the first debate, boy, back when he did. But, you know, I was thinking about the Lion King. You know, Biden's son, Bo, was Simba. He was the young, you know, king coming up and died, you know, before he could ascend. And Hunter is the, you know, it's like he's the king's son who isn't qualified to become king.
Right.
But he has that role, like he's been sucked up into this, and it's like just a liability again and again and again. Except for the fact, like, I think, you know, Biden, the picture of Biden hugging Hunter when he came back from his conviction, I think played really well, like, to, you know, some of the constituencies that you're talking about.
He's being a good dad.
People and,
yeah, he's being a good dad. I think he does win on that score. Absolutely. Whereas we never really see Trump, but, you know, even give the least nod to these kids, right?
Right. Maybe go to dads. Like, are there good fathers if they weren't kings, like, that we can rescue and use?
Well, any of these symbols are really composites, right? So dadness, good dadness can be a composite. Wise, sage old king can be a composite. I think maybe we've stumbled on something here of what we're missing are the young knights who will fight and die for him, and who take up the cause, because if the king falls, one of them will take his place.
Well, here's what we need. Okay, so this is, as you're talking about this, so we've essentially just seen Joe Biden the Gray, like Gandalf the Gray. He needs to go away and slay a major demon and come back as Joe Biden the White, you know, with the pain and coming down at sunrise in the morning to slay all the hordes of orcs, which clearly Trump is an orc. He's an orc.
Army of orcs, right? Once again, I think we have to acknowledge this. Trump is not really that important to the fabric. He's simply an avatar for a team of people, and that's revealed so frequently to me. He's giving voice. He's great at channeling that, and I think that does make him different from other despots in the past.
He is clearly a corporate product. He's a product of think tanks. He's a product of, you know, them poaching from all these different past authoritarian rhetoric.
Oh, and just,
and
you know,
just a vessel of
conspiracy insanity. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
he really is channeling that crap, and I think that is part of the what the rhetoric is doing there is people are glad to see that voiced, right? They're glad to see that voice because it is underground.
And it's, I mean, traditionally it's a voice, like there are a lot of orcs in every culture, right? They're orc people who don't succeed really. They don't have the nice houses. They get beat up. They're on drugs, all these different things that is orc life. And it never makes it into politics. Those are always the enemy. So it's not like if both sides start talking elevated again and showing their educations and their allegiance to the, you know, American history and democracy, those are things they would never succeed in. The orcs know that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they're showing composite sketches. Sorry to extend this direction, but they're showing composite sketches of Biden's memory lapse here and there. But how about a composite sketch of the questions that were asked Donald Trump that just bounced off of him and hit the ground? And I'm thinking as you're talking of the army of orcs, right? And what will you do for them? 100,000 people died of opioids. They asked him that three times, I think, and he meandered off on some complete other crap. And that's a pretty good question about being the leader of the orc army. You got some people in pain out there. What is it you plan to do, or how do you just even show any compassion? Instead, he's sort of, well, this isn't my problem. It's just that's because we are living a dying country, I guess. No.
Well, did you see like today one of the things, the misstatements or misspeaks that Trump said was, you know, the Hispanics are legal immigrants are coming here to take black jobs. And all the black, you know, professionals today are like, oh, they're going to take, are they coming to take my surgeon job? It's all over black Twitter and you know, black
social media. Yeah. And furthermore, none of these white, blue collar types, agrarian types, whatever they are, the composite sketch of irritated about immigration, white guys are if they were taking black jobs, they wouldn't be worried about this.
Right.
That's not the myth over there. So
yeah.
I guess he's trying to get black people to sign up for that same absurdity.
Yeah, Joe Biden, the white. I think the resurrection to the, you know, the elevated self.
He needs some kind of trial. Well, I've been thinking, you know, what are the possible repairs is that if he does some sort of, you know, sit down Barbara Walters kind of interview. I mean, Trump has these restorative interviews with Sean Hannity all the time where Sean feeds him the answer and he still gets it wrong. Biden needs to show that he can sit still for an hour and answer these questions in a more calm register, and that would at least push into the background the context of the, you know, the all-star wrestling match that we've constructed is these debates.
I don't know, man. I think him spectacle of just the powerful, you know, Biden. I just enjoyed it so much this morning when he was like, you know what, I know this, I know this, I know this, and I can tell the truth. And I'm like, yeah, Trump is such a massive target. You know, throw the spears, you know, hit him hard. And if he approaches the next debate coming in, it's like, look, we're talking about policy, you know, take Trump down and then talk about your vision for America. And that's really what people want to see.
That's right. No, they definitely got to do something to change. Yeah, I don't know whether they did it and he just got pressured and, you know, fell back on what he, you know, once again, that's how he's been spending his time, is talking about the policies that we've been doing. I mean, that's what you do under stress, is you kick back on what you know.
Well, and I talk to conservatives, and I go on conservative podcasts, and I go on hyper-religious podcasts, and I'm like, it is you have to come in there with a zen. You have to come in there with a kind of a plan, because it's such a bizarre feed coming towards you, and it comes in a barrage. Like they don't want to slow down and do deductive logic on what they're saying. They do really hit you with a barrage. And because I'm a, you know, rhetorician, I've got the academic background, I can invoke that to stop them a little bit and say, okay, let's just take just a little bit of rhetoric training with you. Let me just give you a tiny little bit. You know, let's look at what a qualifier is. You know, if you tell me, like one of the guys I was talking to, I may have said this before, you know, told me that the Greeks were all pedophiles. And that, you know, was their, so you shouldn't listen to anything they said. And I'm like, well, let's just talk about the word all. Like, are you telling me every Greek man in ancient Greek was a pedophile? Because that's what you just said. Or is it a few, like everywhere, every culture, there's some pedophiles. Now, you tell me which one it is. And so at least to get that concept in there of your bizarro talk, over here, there are a rational set of talk tools that you can use, you know, and at least I get a little bit of those, you know, back into their repertoire. But Trump never got challenged at all about the way he was talking. Right. You know, not really. No, they were going after the moderators today. Absolutely no fact checking, no blowback at all. Just like, thank you, sir, for that, you know.
That enlightening description.
Yes, may I have another? You know,
So I'm still thinking that what Biden needs is a mountain troll, and maybe it doesn't have to be Trump. Maybe he could slay somebody else along the
yeah.
way.
Well, I
definitely felt they need to call out these people who are behind Trump. I think that by focusing over and over again on Trump and his alley cat morality and yada yada yada. That they're failing to really expose the people who are using Trump to get, you know, because Trump, you know, he is kind of a clown, as I think you've noted many times, and he can seem kind of benign because he doesn't know how to do anything. He has no skills.
Right.
So I think, you know, people just sort of say his role here as kind of the gadfly of liberalism is what's carried him this far.
Well,
his up close slander, as you've identified it, they played the tapes of him in the early Republican debates, primary debates of the previous election that he won. And that's what he did to every one of those people. He would stand right next to them and insult them, right? And change topic and call them out on their wives or their dads or their, you know, just the most banal kind of, you know, internet folklore about these people. And I think, you know, once again, a bunch of, you know, pretty rude people who really liked that kind of punching around were kind of the core there.
Well, it's the rise of the roast battle. I mean, I wrote roasts in Hollywood. Like they just did the roast of Tom Brady. Right. And my old head writer, Mike Gibbons, runs those. And he used to, like, they ran a show called The Burn with Jeff, Jeff Ross, who does all the roasts, and I was going to be a writer for that because I'm so good at burns, especially on celebrities, you know. And so what Trump was really doing, it's, you know, it's an insult fest. It's a roast battle. And if you don't engage and, you know, out insult the insulter, you are going to get burned. You know, there's no way around it. Like, there's no way to avoid the fact that you've been pulled into this sort of, you know, hard fire interaction. And stay above it. I thought the first time when Biden did get elected, he had enough space to do that. He kept pulling stuff back up here into traditional rhetoric, you know, of elevated, we're here to be America, don't listen to this clown.
When we can still remember what that sounded like.
Yeah, Trump got him, like pulled him into the darkness and just took over he mosh pitted that debate.
Yeah. Well, and other people have made that observation that somehow having Trump unable to interrupt him sort of stole one of the best things Biden had going for him, right?
Yeah, Trump looked
which was
Trump
just playing looked off cool. of Trump rather than being stuck with 2 minutes of his own. Yeah.
Yeah, Trump looked like he was in control. He looked like he was, you know, participating. He looked more presidential. I did think at one point, like when he does that stupid smile thing that he does, like if they'd put the Grinch up next to him it's the Grinch face. You know, any of that kind of stuff to change the way people think about Trump and do it visually or do it with one-liners so that they can actually remember it.
Yeah, but I'm not sure they have to do that. I mean, I think Trump on his own, I don't think he did himself any favors there. I think that people can see that that's what's going on. So I think he's still going to have his hardcore supporters, but I think they're probably, a little more, in the deficit this morning than they were yesterday in terms of his performance. I think, there's just a lot of people that know, yeah, he's an old man who's lost it as well. And, and the mantra of lies around which this maelstrom circulates is baloney, and can't actually govern. I think a lot of people, a lot of educated Republicans know this.
Well,
So,
I don't know if you saw this last week, but that you're talking about them bringing out his surrogates around Trump. The guy who had the head of the Heritage Foundation, I think it is, they trotted him out into the media last week, and he had five or six appearances on even CNN and things like that, where they gave him 10 or 12 minutes of an interview, to throw around the 2025 project, essentially. And to say, so it was a sense of, oh, they're getting emboldened of stepping out from behind the Trump clown car and being like, oh, here's Clarence Thomas, and Alito, like in some actual, background personal things that they've been doing. And it still doesn't seem to be blowing apart the orc world. Like,
well, I don't
you know.
think you can expect to blow apart the orc world. All you have to do is win the election. I think that's I think it's going to have to die under its own freight. I don't,
Well, what
and
is the
I think it has already lost vitality,
I think it
and
has a
I
lot.
don't think last night gave it any. I really don't think that it was energized. I think more people are just frustrated about their choice today, and Democrats are defeated because they wanted to be vindicated and weren't.
How do you, like, as a rhetorical strategy, cleave the Trump clown from the orc population? Like, how do you, like, what would actually do it? Because I see him trying to do it with amplifying Trump's villainy of, hey, he's talking, like I was saying earlier, he's literally talking like the Nazis. They've hit him with that, but that doesn't seem to do anything. That doesn't seem to scare the orc world at all. They're like, yeah, those guys have, cool black clothes. So, like, and Putin, like, associating with Putin doesn't seem to scare the orc world at all. So amplifying Trump's villainy doesn't seem to do much as a rhetorical strategy. What do you do? Like, do you, like, go in and, like, use their villains? Like, is Trump trans? Like, maybe you say that. You're like, hey, he looks, didn't he just, do you use their villains to try to cleave, that association?
I guess if I knew, I would bottle it and sell it. But
Turn it
I
loose.
think the kinds of things that they're doing, are effective strategies. The 40 of 44 people work with you are not endorsing you, of the people who work in your White House. So who is? I mean, maybe they need to close that deal a little harder. Who are the people that will be supporting you and will be in your White House? Asking him last night, how do you feel about the Proud Boys? And that was a good moment for Biden, really, to sort of say, and Trump has no answer. I think they're finding ways to cleave him off. I think more and more people do not want to return Trump to the White House. I think that the problem is how they see the viable choice, and that's exactly the problem on the other side of the fence as well.
So maybe that's it. Maybe instead of us, putting all the rhetorical energy on getting more spears into the Trump bull, in the
Harpoons into the
bullfight,
Moby Dick. Yes.
which I still think they're sitting there. Like, one of the things I would have done to him last night, because he kept throwing out numbers, he kept doing 18 million, 18 million. I would have been like, hey, I don't care about 18 million. The number I care about is 12, which is the number of jurors, who's just convicted you of 34 felonies. Why don't we talk about that? Or the 3 hours where you didn't do anything, while this, storm was happening. And just to localize it into script fragments like that, which you can jam into people and they tend to stick in the media. because if it's simple, they'll repeat it.
I don't know that the White King can pull that one off, but.
I don't know. Like I can like I've watched Gavin Newsom for a while, and he's good with one-liners. He's good with dialogue.
But he's the young Galahad. Yes,
yeah. Of course. So what do we do to embolden the Joe Biden White King? Like, how do we make that happen? Is it stuff like this morning where he comes out and speaks forcefully without, you know, stumbling and doesn't look like an old man?
Well, I think at some point or another, he's got to pull that performance off. I think
he got to wrestle an alligator? Should we have him wrestle an alligator?
I don't know. I guess we need to see him carry his own golf bag now and swing at it. Yeah, maybe.
Like they put him on a bicycle every once in a while.
Yeah. Well, but he wrecked, right?
Fell over when he parked.
Buttigieg's line in response to that was a good one. He says, "I'm happy to serve with a man who is capable of riding a bicycle." He's got the best answers of anybody when it comes right down.
Well, he's the sharpest. Like, he's the best, you know, he's got the best sort of prose writing. Like, he sat there, you know, the other day eviscerating all the Republicans with their questions because he actually had numbers in front of him. So he's super smart. I'm not sure that plays in this world the same way it used to. But he's definitely also one of the surrogates, and they've been sending him out even before all this.
Well, yeah. I think the round table has to make an appearance, and you know that the loyalty thing might actually sell. I think because when it comes right down to it, Trump's just as old. He's just as frail. He's just as likely to die in office. When it comes right down to it, obese 78-year-old men are not, you know, that long for the world, he may be making more verbal fluency at the moment, but it's all garbage. And so I'm not sure that works in the Oval Office any better than somebody who has to be reminded of something here and there.
Well, clearly, like if we could get people onto the track of just, you know, judge the governance versus the rhetoric coming at you from, you know, there's no choice. You know, there was no governance whatsoever from Trump. It's all just looting.
Well, that's the pundit formulation this morning. Okay, Biden has proven he can be president and can run the country, but he's failed to run the campaign in a way that so the same distinction you were making between administration and communication, right?
Yeah, is this a communication war? Do you want the best communicator, or do you want the best guy who's going
to? And maybe, you know, maybe to kind of go back and remind us of all the really poor communicators that have been fairly decent president. There could be some history lessons here, and I've heard them. You know, FDR was in pretty bad shape. He just didn't have the media attention. Eisenhower, I guess, they were challenging his competency at the end. Reagan was certainly out to lunch about as much as one would hope. So
it's that kind of clarifying identity work. Like, if they can say, yeah, bad communication night, whatever, move all that around. Administrator, like, that's what you want in a president. Guy gets things done. And he even said it this morning in his vindication talk of, I know how to get things done. I can do this job. I've proven this. There's actual proof, versus Trump, which basically was, you know, a train wreck on every front administratively. I mean, literally trying to take apart all the administrative institutions that we've built up, like the Supreme Court did today, essentially saying, you know, the government can't create the EPA. They can't create oversight institutions.
But to have been delivered to that moment, it gets back, and this is kind of the rhetorical question in the age of media. Is that enough? Can you deliver? Can you win the presidency without the other component? So can this be repaired? Will people go, you know? And the fact is that he's probably too old to be doing this. I mean,
for sure. There's no doubt.
They both are. They both are when it comes right down to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the plain truth that most people are seeing. So yeah, I'm not sure that is really for either of them reparable.
Well,
So
I
at some
think
point, the disaffect is from the political system.
if I were going to do identity work on that, and again, I've seen him do this, admit, yes, I'm old, and I don't talk as well as I used to, and I don't debate as well as I used to, but I still know how to do this job really well. And if he can get that identity shift over from, hey, quit focusing on these external factors, look at the internal work of a president, then maybe he can get some traction. Like you said, I'm not sure it's mythic and spectacle and big enough to drive,
Well, but once
people.
again, the question is, will that be enough? Do Americans have a dramatistic slash rhetorical need for the ritual of this the campaign? Is it so craving that they need that? They were saying that about Biden last time. I've got the younger progressive wing. I want to be thrilled. I've got no. I'm 70 years old. I don't need to be thrilled. I don't need to be animated. I don't need passion. I need somebody who cannot be the crap show that we've been dealing with. And for a while that worked. That sold. Okay, yeah, an end to the chaos. So yes, people need to be reminded of, and we need a little fact sheet about what really the circumstances were on January 6th. I mean, Trump just made up stuff and that he did that Biden actually did. And so we need a little fact sheet about that. So there's a lot of rhetorical fodder here for messaging. Can you restore the ethos of the king here, and make people comfortable with that? Can they and once again, maybe the young Turks taking up the mantle and giving the promise that yeah, at the end of this, somebody's going to take his place.
Right. Well, and I think when you're saying that, it's a tough sell for Americans. They called Reagan the great communicator. They didn't call him the great administrator.
Right,
I
exactly.
don't think we've got that hero, too much in our culture of the person that's just really good at running things without a bunch of bruff and spectacle around it. But that's really what a president is supposed to be. Supposed to step up every once in a while and say some big things about the country, but you want him to be the great administrator.
Well, but that's a struggle in our corporate cultures all the way down. I mean, in leadership, there, I think that binary is there. That you want somebody who goes to his office and solves the problems and makes the world a tolerable place to work, or do you want somebody who's creating splash? The guys who and women who create splash get paid more. And even if you've got the guy taking care of the problems, you want the other guy. And sorry for the sexism of the language, but a non-gendered guy,
Yes.
the person who does that.
Splashy. You want the
And
splashy human.
so, well, you think you're going to get more. You think there's going to be more rewards at the end of it for whatever. And I guess once again, it's. I think the con. We talk about the old king and the myth of this. The construct of the leader goes way, way back. And I think I've dealt with people in leadership studies throughout the years, who don't have the kind of the rhetorical mindset to understand that identity. And its history is so crucial. They're completely unable to explain Trump. There's just nothing in the academic model of leadership studies that could even begin to handle what happened there. They might have
Right.
just checked it all at the door, because they're not looking at the dynamism of right. Well, the tribalism. They're in some sort of hyper rational business mode.
Well, and again, I tend to think, one of the strong strands I clearly like in rhetoric is film and story. And I think of like Braveheart, right? Which I call Brave Hair. It's Mel Gibson, and yes, he's a lot of action, but he's also super smart in that, like, he figures out the long poles, to hide in order to fight the heavy cavalry. And every battle he goes into, he has pre-thought it through better than the English. And so there is a little bit of that kind of, super expert, being able to see through things, the administrative mind that can look at the engineering of it all and figure it out. And I don't think Biden has that. kind of ethos, but he has that around him. That's sort of the sell, right?
You know, I think if there's an expertise there, it is simply an understanding and not getting, you know, of the political process. And
yeah, a legislative expertise for sure.
And understanding that, you know, you don't set your hair on fire every day, that if you hang in there and keep pitching, that eventually you can get stuff done. And he proved it. You know, and of course, Trump was the exact opposite. He made talk about all this crap and never got anything done.
Never got anything
had
done.
No
yet.
Ability to organize anything. He was completely foiled. So, but I don't think Americans construct leader, and I don't think Americans construct the presidency. They certainly don't construct the rhetorical campaign, the hero, the vindicator, whatever it may be. They don't construct any of that with that in mind, and are really kind of impatient with that. In fact, it runs against the sort of, you know, it runs against the American monomyth that the person who could really solve problems isn't the guy that masters the organization and keeps the community together. It is the lone outsider that comes in on a horse with a mask and does battle with evil and rides off in the sunset. And the only thing wrong with Trump is he didn't ride off. when it comes right down to it.
He blocked the sunset.
And that was interesting rant of his. I would have ran off. I would have ran off, but I had to stay here and fight Biden. I don't buy that at all.
I don't think so. Well, yeah, that's a good place to for us to stop this idea that maybe part of the reason why I do these podcasts and the whole idea of political persuasion training for America is that maybe we can evolve some of those skills, some of those, you know, frames to take us into like looking at these people as leaders as opposed to kings, you know, because really for a mature superpower that we're supposedly at least moving towards, that's what you expect. It's like, hey, we've got the greatest country here, the biggest economy, biggest military. We've got all this stuff. It needs to be protected, not put at risk constantly by this crazy king. It needs just a very metered understanding of a leader, you know? And so maybe that's something we teach the people.
Yeah. I think so. I think the evolution is slow. I think, you know, there are signs of real progress in the miasmas that we're stuck in right now. I think the gap between sort of the party drama and the voter is actually a sign of that sort of maturation. Mm-hmm. That most people are not a lot, you know, or it's about half and half, right? So it's 25% Republicans, 25% Democrats, and 50 people going, what? So I do think that's a terrible teenage stage to be in, because once again, you've got to develop the adult consciousness and get the job done. But I heard that as they interviewed people, regular people about how they took last night. I heard that being said. I also heard, though, I'm looking for leadership here, and I didn't get it either place.
Maybe it is that adolescence of America. Maybe that's the way we sort of frame it for now, that as we start to grow up and don't need these, you know, big bombastic characters to, you know, fire our imaginations, what we need is a leader that can explain things in a way that's like, hey, I know you're worried about your retirement. This is the best way to get there. I'll keep people from, you know, hacking into it, and you end up with zero. And people are like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. You know, so maybe we're getting there.
Well, I return to the metaphor of the global village with always the reminder that things were really a mess in the village when it came right down to it.
Right. That's why there's more than one idiot in the village.
There you go.
So, well, thanks for popping on again. Again, you know, we'll see in what, just under 4 months, July, August, September, October. Yeah, just over 4 months, which rhetoric's going to win.
Well, we have another debate in September. I think
we do.
I think there are Las Vegas odds on who's going to duck out of that one first. But
yeah, here's what I want to see.
But I think the way it works is neither of them can. So
yeah, it's a loss if you do. What I want is for Biden to walk onto the stage, drop down a line of Coke, hit it, and go, all right, let's go, buddy. It's like they keep talking about his drugs. Like, okay, here's me on drugs. Let's do it.
Well, check out the John Stewart clip from last night of him looking soberly into the camera saying, well, what we learned was that both of these men need to take performance-enhancing drugs.
For sure. All right.
Thanks,
well,
Dad.
Thanks again, Dave. Thanks again, Dave Payne. We will talk to you again soon.
Sure.
This has been the Rhetoric Warriors Podcast. We'll see you next time. Get out there and persuade. People need it.